We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Welcome back, Sports Radio 94 WIP. Joe Giglio with you. Tucker Bagley behind the glass. You guys with us, 215-592-9494. That is how you get aboard here. The Sixers are driving me crazy, two games back into the bubble, which actually looks awesome. I mean, the bubble itself is great. Basketball all day is unbelievable. We also get sports basically all day, every day, with baseball for most of these teams being back. The Phillies, we know we got a game last night. We did not get one tonight, as they are off, or they were off, because of the hurricane remnants and what we got today. Beautiful tonight, no baseball, but we'll get a doubleheader tomorrow, in which we'll have Aaron Nola on the mound, we'll have Zach Wheeler on the mound, a seven-inning doubleheader. Phillies will try to avoid a further hole here. Let's talk to Bob Wankel of Crossing Broad about the Phils, about a crazy last week and really what's to come here the rest of the season. Bob, how you doing, man?
Joe, what's up? How are you tonight?
Bob, I'm doing well. I was doing better until I remember what the Phillies bullpen was like, which we remembered last night against the Yankees. Bob, it feels like a problem. We discussed this, I think, last week, but that Joe Girardi is going to try to mix and match and figure out a formula here. But in this kind of season, it's difficult because every game, the calendar flips over. We don't even know how many games they're going to play. Like, Joe doesn't have a normal season where he could take 3 weeks or so to figure out his formula in the bullpen. Like, he's got to figure this out soon, and I don't know what he's going to do.
Yeah, he said last night that he wants to see, you can't fairly judge guys until they make 3 or 4 appearances. But frankly, he just doesn't have that much time, especially now given that they're behind in terms of the schedule and they're behind in the standings. I mean, 1-3 is no good. Obviously, the situation has certainly kind of been stacked against them here. But yeah, I mean, they're in a little bit of a hole. And, this is last night, the third game that they lose. And out of the bullpen, it was a competitive game once he went to the bullpen. And then it quickly became a non-competitive game. And I don't know that he has a bridge guy. I mean, you saw Adam Morgan pitch well last night. Tommy Hunter threw the ball pretty well. Jose Alvarez threw the ball pretty well. But you need somebody to be able to bridge the gap between your starting pitchers and then your more high-leverage late-inning guys. And I almost wonder at some point if he doesn't have that bridge-type relief pitcher, he may have to get a little bit more aggressive and use some of his better arms in these middle innings. It would be great to save them for the eighth and ninth, but if you can't remain competitive by the time you get there, then what's the difference? And so that would be one adjustment that Joe Girardi may have to make as he goes along here, unless somebody can kind of stabilize things in the sixth and seventh innings.
Yeah, and that's what we see a lot around baseball now, where teams do that. Obviously, we saw that in the past with the Phillies last couple of years, and the Brewers do it with Josh Hader. We see it a lot, where teams will use their better arms just to get through the sixth or seventh inning, because that might change the game there. We're talking to Bob Wankel of Crossing Broad about the Phils. Bob, you mentioned it was a competitive game last night. I am not one that seems to ever look forward to Jake Arrieta starts, but maybe I've lowered the bar, but I'll take what he gave last night, especially against an offense like the Yankees. And I thought he got better as the outing went on, especially towards the end where he got some swings and misses. What did you think about Arrieta last night?
Yeah, I thought he pitched pretty well, all things considered. Again, this is a guy that also had a significant layoff, first regular season game since the middle of last August. And against that lineup and the way that they're swinging the bats right now, I think that you have to be pretty pleased with how Jake Arrieta pitched last night. I think we have to recalibrate our expectations with him a little bit. We're talking about a 34-year-old guy who's on the downside of his career. We're never going to see 2015, 2016 Jake Arrieta. It's just not the reality of the situation at this point. But I did think that he got better as the game went along, and that was kind of his pattern in his summer camp outings as well. He was a little bit shaky in the early innings, and then he was stabilized as he got into his fourth, fifth, sixth innings. And we saw a little bit of that last night, and I was very encouraged that he ripped off a couple pretty heavy sliders in the fifth inning, especially fourth and fifth innings, and finished the game pretty strong. So overall, I think that that's something that you have to feel pretty good about. I think we talked a few weeks ago, and I told you one of the keys to this Philly season, in my opinion, is the ability to get something that resembles a quality number three starter out of Jake Arrieta. And last night was a good step forward. I think that he will, for the most part this season, given his health, given that it's a contract year, which I do think is a consideration, I think that the motivation will be there. And he just seems like he's in a little bit of a different place. Last night he didn't point fingers. He kind of took the blame, said, you know, I made some mistakes, even on the cheapy home runs. And I just kind of get the sense that he's going to give the Phillies a shot most nights that he goes out there this season.
Yeah, if Jake's not pointing fingers, he must be in a good mood, because that's usually the opposite of that when it comes to Arrieta. Bob, I'm going to throw three names at you. All three are off to relatively slow starts when you look at their numbers. I mean, it's four games, but all three are not off to, let's say, red-hot starts. Tell me which of these three you're most concerned about. Andrew McCutchen, Rhys Hoskins, or Scott Kingery?
I'll tell you that I'm the least concerned about Scott Kingery, but I'm very concerned about both Andrew McCutchen and Rhys Hoskins. And, you know, looking at Andrew McCutchen specifically, I thought that he looked pretty good in the summer camp. I thought he swung the bat pretty well. I thought he was moving around okay for the most part. But from what I've observed in this limited amount of games so far, he just doesn't look all the way back. Like, he can make plays in left field. He can get down the line, but it just looks like there's this slight hitch in his step right now. And I think we're seeing a little bit of that at the plate as well. And I don't know if it's a physical issue, if it's a mental issue, but I just don't know that he's 100%. And it certainly doesn't look like it right now. Again, it's a super small sample size. I don't want to overreact to what we've seen so far. I tried to write that in my story this morning. Just, hey, listen, it's been four games. They were through a heck of a week last week. Let's not slam the panic button yet, but there does look to be something just a little bit off with Andrew McCutchen. And as far as Rhys Hoskins goes, I believe that there should be significant concern there, not just with how he finished last season, hit 180 after the All-Star break, but I just think that he's totally lost. I don't think he knows what he is as a hitter right now. I think he's still feeling for a lot of pitches. I don't think he trusts himself. It seems like he's kind of off the front foot on a lot of his swings. And not to say that it won't click, and certainly he has a great eye and can work walks and do all of those things, but he just looks like a guy that is lost to me right now.
He does, and that's a worry, because right now he's the number two hitter in this lineup, and no matter where he goes, he's going to be an important piece. Bob Wankel, Crossing Broad, joining us here. Bob, tomorrow it's a doubleheader against the Yankees, and as the Phillies try to make up a bunch of games, and we know what the challenges lie ahead if they're going to play 60 or close to it, but Bob, what's your thought on the reaction of baseball over the last week? Now we've had two teams, right? First was the Marlins, and they're back playing tonight. And now it's been the Cardinals. And it seems like from top to bottom, even a guy like Joe Girardi, every time I heard him talk about it, it seems like everyone has kind of accepted that this is going to be the plan, where if and when this happens again, and hopefully it doesn't, but likelihood it is, they're just going to remove a team for a week, hope for the best, get as many guys out of the room as possible, and then when the team is healthy enough and the testing has gone enough days, they're going to just assimilate that team back in. Bob, if I had told you this 3 weeks ago, I think we would have said, I don't know about that. But that seems to be baseball's plan now. An outbreak happens, that team disappears for a week, and the show goes on.
Yeah, I mean, the disruption to the regular schedule here is going to be significant. And I think that baseball almost expected to impact every team before all is said and done. I mean, hopefully that's not the case, but I kind of get the sense that baseball is looking around right now and saying every team is going to have to make up games. Every team is going to be in a position where they're going to have to play multiple doubleheaders because of COVID-19. And, you know, I think that the one concern really, in addition to the virus, is the impact that it's going to have on players from an injury standpoint that's not COVID-related. You know, you're seeing a lot of pitchers go down right now. A lot of relief pitchers are getting injured at an alarming rate, almost four or five times. I believe The Athletic actually did a story on this in the last day or two. But just the situation where guys are being significantly injured. You saw what happened to Soroka last night in Atlanta. And I think that actually, in a way, and not to diminish or downplay concerns about the coronavirus, but to me, that may be even a more pressing issue, because we're not talking about just removing guys from play for a week or two. we're talking about injuries that could potentially impact the 2021 season now. And you're starting to see a lot of arms specifically go down. And I think baseball has to be very concerned about that. And I just wonder how each individual organization is going to play this as things progress in trying to protect their players a little bit. And I think that in part, that's why you saw Jake Arrieta come out after 78 pitches last night.
Yeah, it's interesting. It reminds me a little bit of the NFL lockout. Obviously, there was not a pandemic with that, but an NFL lockout in 2011. A lot of injuries that year, soft tissue, Achilles. Guys were just, you really kind of ravaged the rosters. It could be happening in baseball. Last baseball question, Bob. Then we have to ask you a question about milk here. But last baseball question. The NL East right now, you know, heading into the season, whether the one that was supposed to be 162 or just the 60-game season, I would have said it's one of baseball's best divisions. You have four teams that can make the playoffs. I could guess them in any order. Four, you know, 84, 85 or better win teams. Early on, whether it be injury or just struggles, I don't feel the same way about the NL East. The Braves lose Soroka. The Nationals lineup just has a big hole without Rendon. The Mets have gotten off to a disastrous start, including Cespedes going AWOL on Sunday. And obviously we know the Phillies' issues. Bob, early thoughts on the NL East, because the way I look at it right now, it could be a division that only takes the two teams it has to take to the playoffs in the first two spots.
It's been an unimpressive start, and I think that that's one of the reasons, if you're a Phillies fan right now, despite the underwhelming start for them specifically, that you shouldn't go too crazy here, because this division, it doesn't look like any team is going to rip off 37, 40, 45 wins and just run away with this thing. That team doesn't exist, and I would have told you maybe that would be the Atlanta Braves, but that injury that they sustained last night was a killer. I have concerns. I had concerns about the Nationals coming into the season, and I actually expected to see a little bit more from the Mets, but they have been terrible. And because the Phillies haven't been on and I haven't been at the stadium and I haven't had an opportunity to really dial in on the Phillies all that much, I've been exposed to a lot of Mets baseball, and they have been horrible. They don't hit situationally. The starting pitching has been terrible outside of DeGrom. They don't play defense. I mean, they are a terrible defensive team. And so it's wide open. And I agree with you that probably only two teams are going to come out of this division.
Bob, last one for you. My producer, Tucker Bagley, he revealed to everyone last night that he drinks 3 gallons of milk per week. Bob, one, are you a milk drinker? And two, do you think the 3 gallons thing is excessive?
I'm a milk drinker in the way that when I finish a bowl of cereal, I'll drink the rest of the bowl. But that's about it. Like, I'm not pouring a separate glass of milk, you know, like, if there's a little cereal residue in there, a little sweetness, I'm going to drink it. But I'm not going separate glass. I actually asked him before we got on the air. I said, are you mixing in, like, chocolate milk here? Or what's the deal? Is this all cereal-based? And he said, no, I'll have dinner, and I just pour a glass. I'm out on that. I think that's a little weird.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, the guy's over here. He brings milk to work. Like, I feel like an intervention is necessary. Bob, I appreciate you hopping on tonight. Enjoy a doubleheader tomorrow. We'll chat soon.
We'll talk to you soon.
There he goes. Bob Wankel of Crossing Broad joining us there. So, yeah, man, I think that's reasonable. Right? He has milk in his cereal.
I just want to clarify, don't pour milk in glasses.
You drink it out of the gallon.
Yeah.
So it's your milk. You don't even share it with your family.
No. If they want milk, they buy another gallon. Like, if my mom's baking, she buys, like, another half gallon.
So, like, this is like a quirk more than it is it's like an obsession.
It's a lifestyle.
Yeah, this is the first time I've ever heard anyone tell me that the amount of milk they drink is a lifestyle. 215-592-9494. Bob brought up something there that I tweeted something similarly this morning. Andrew McCutchen doesn't look right to me. And I understand it's 4 games. I don't care that he's hitting 071. How many at-bats has he had? 11, 12, whatever. It's a very small sample. I'm not talking about his stats. I don't care. That's not my point. Something looks off with Andrew McCutchen. He looked, obviously we know he wasn't all the way back in spring training. He wasn't going to be ready for the season. Then I think the common refrain, I said it a lot on the show, was this is going to help him. He gets extra time to get himself back together, to get himself fully healthy. He's now a year plus off of his torn ACL last year in San Diego in early June. You know, he's about, what, 14 months post-surgery, probably around there? It just doesn't look right. Something is off. When he runs, there's a gait to when he's running. And when he's at the plate, I don't sense he trusts his legs, which in hitting, it's everything. I mean, your legs and your lower half, that gets your swing going. Something just feels off with Andrew McCutchen. And I hope it's just a natural thing. Like, you know, you watch a player come back from an ACL, quarterback, Carson, like a recent example here. It took him a few games. He wasn't moving and everything wasn't right that first game. Actually, that first year he wasn't really right, but at least he got to knock that rust off. My eyes tell me something's wrong with McCutchen, and I don't mean he's hurt. I think it's probably mental more than it's physical, because I think he's well past being cleared. He's fine physically. I think it's in his head.
I think it is a mental thing, and you hear that a lot with ACL guys. And even if Carson Wentz did come back early, I'm sure his knee was fully reconstructed, and for the most part, his strength was back, and he had issues with it. The one guy I always go back to when we talk about confidence in a knee is Cornelius Ingram. Remember him? He was a tight end out of Florida.
Oh, yeah.
The Eagles drafted him. He's going to be a first-round pick. He tore his ACL, I think, back-to-back years, so he fell to, like, the third or fourth round. He never played with the Eagles. He kept tearing his ACL again and again. But he had a quote the one time that I always thought was interesting, was he never got confidence in his knee back playing football. He got it back by playing pickup basketball. He's like, in football, he was always thinking about his routes and running and can I cut and can I move and can I do this? And he said he went and just started playing pickup basketball, and you don't think about it. You're just out there having fun, running around the court, playing whatever, and he realized, oh, I am okay, and you get over that mental hurdle. And I think it's tough for Andrew McCutchen right now to do that.
It has to be. And you know what? It's four games. He hits a home run tomorrow. We're probably going to forget about this and say, oh, he's producing again. It's my eyes. My eyes are telling me he's not the same McCutchen he was last year. There was he's always been a great athlete. He was obviously a former MVP of the National League, but there was always a very spry athlete to him, even as he aged. Like, you could tell he was going to age well as a player. And I think that's why the Phillies signed him. And just I see it. Something is a little off. Dante's in Delaware. Dante is up on WIP. What's up, man? Dante?
Hey, Joe.
Hey, Dante, what's up?
So, this is my actually first time calling because it's so funny how you brought up the subject. I had to come call and defend Tucker. I drink milk literally, so I got six cartons in my fridge right now. I drink about the same, like 3 gallons a week. I'll drink it straight from the gallon just like Tucker does. There's no glass. It's funny because when I moved in with my friends as roommates, they finally were like, saw how much milk I was buying. They were like, what are you doing with all this milk? Like, for cereal? It's like, no, like, I drink milk on a daily basis, like every hour. Like, if I go on a run and it's hot outside, I'll come in and I'll drink milk. Like, I don't want water.
So not water or Gatorade. You'll drink a glass of milk after a run.
Correct.
And so you've always, like, this has been your whole life since you were a kid?
This has been my whole life.
Yeah.
And I just realized that it was weird. Recently, like when I got older, like I had no idea it was weird to drink that much milk until someone said something. And then this is the first time I actually met like Tucker, who actually drinks milk like I do. Like, I'll get anxiety if I have like a gallon and a half left in my fridge. Like, if I'm low on milk, I'll start to get anxiety. Like, I'll know I need to go to the grocery store or whatever to get more milk.
Dante, it sounds to me, and I'm kidding, obviously, because it's not a bad thing, but it sounds to me like you're addicted to milk.
Exactly. Like, I would say, like, if my doctor was like, you got to stop, like, just like a smoker, like, I probably wouldn't be able to stop. Like, I don't think.
Do they have dairy patches or vaping you could do for milk?
Dairy Anonymous.
Dairy's Anonymous.
I think there's worse things to be addicted to, so it's like, yes. I'm fine with it, but yeah, absolutely.
Dante, well, listen, I'm glad there's someone out there that thinks like Tucker, so I know he's not a complete unicorn. Dante, I appreciate it. Call again. Good call there. This guy keeps 6 gallons at a time in the fridge.
Yeah, I mean, not have it, which 6 is a lot because milk goes bad pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you know you're going to drink that much.
Yeah, but not having milk in the fridge is the worst thing in the world.
I'm going to step in and say there's much worse things.
No, because obviously things aren't open when I get home from work, right? Like, I get home from work around 12:45, 1 a.m. If I get home from work and I make food and I open the fridge and there isn't milk there, it's a waste of a meal. Like, I just wasted 20 minutes of my life. I lose my appetite.
The only things I will have with the meal are water, beer, wine, occasionally an iced tea. That's it. That's the only thing I will have with a meal. And milk's the only thing Tucker will have with the meal.
Well, like, it's weird to order milk at a restaurant.
Yeah, because you're a grown-up.
I wish we could, I mean.
Because you're a grown-up. Have you do this?
No.
You're bullied, but you want to. Why just do it?
I want to, because not a lot of places have it.
No.
And then if they do, it's like, hey, we'll give you like a 6-ounce glass, like, made for children.
I would imagine most restaurants have milk. They serve coffee.
I went to a restaurant once where I think it was my little brother. I was a kid. But one of us ordered milk, and they said they didn't have it. So I walked across the street to the Subway and bought a milk and brought it back.
I'm at a loss for words over here. What is happening? 215-592-9494. Tucker's addicted to milk. Our last caller's addicted to milk. I didn't realize this was a thing until tonight. I wish them the best. Anyway, I need to know. Is this weird that Tucker drinks 3 gallons of milk a week, or is this normal? Because I think it is absolutely weird. Tough guys in sports. I am more frustrated right now with the Sixers than I am the Phillies. And when we get back, George Girardi said something on MLB Network Radio that I thought was interesting about how what they're dealing with, these quarantining of teams and then disappearing for a week or so at a time, it's not going to go away anytime soon. We'll hear from Girardi on the other side. 215-592-9494.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.